This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Doug Baker of the Department of Revenue. Tax amnesty is about to happen as the state tries to retrieve money from delinquent taxpayers. We'll talk about this and a few other matters with Doug Baker. Also, LSU victorious over Kent State Saturday night at Tiger Stadium. We'll recap the game. Jeanine Pirro, the sometimes flamboyant judge from New York, who is now a fixture on media outlets like Fox and NBC. We'll talk with her about Syria and politics. And we'll close the hour with Frank Tavares, a name that you may not know, but you often hear right here on WRKF. He's one of the big voices from National Public Radio. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757, and you may reach us by email inkstershow@wrkf.org. In just a moment, we'll hear from Doug Baker, the Communications Director for the Department of Revenue. We will, in short order, recap LSU's blowout of Kent State Saturday, the Tigers winning 45-13, 3-0 LSU. LSU opens SEC play Saturday at home against Auburn. Auburn is also 3-0 after squeaking by Mississippi State. And LSU, now ranked 6th in the nation, has been installed as a 14.5-point favorite over Auburn. A story that has been developing in the last few hours, members of Delta Kappa Epsilon fraternity have apologized for an offensive sign the fraternity hung before the LSU football game. The LSU Police Department received complaints about the sign, which read, "Getting massacred is nothing new to Kent State." Officers asked Deke members to take down the offensive sign, and LSU PD spokesman Captain Corey Lalonde said that the sign was removed. It referenced the 1970 killing of 4 Kent State students by the Ohio National Guard. Yesterday, Eric Mansfield, Executive Director of Media Relations at Kent State, released a statement saying that Kent State takes offense to the actions and the Deke fraternity has publicly apologized. Doug Baker, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for having us.
And you have an affinity for LSU football.
I do.
You were in the band, right?
I was, 4 years.
And the years were?
I was there 1987 to 1991.
87, LSU went 10-1-1. 88, they won the SEC championship. In 89, they went 4-7. And in 1990, under Hudson Curley Holman, they went 5-6. And in 91? They went 2-9, if I remember correctly. So,
well, to your listeners, I want them to know that you did that without one bit of notes, ladies and gentlemen. That is pure memory recall there. It's impressive, Jim. Yes, that's right.
Well, thank you. I love you too, Doug. And some taxpayers are getting a break from Doug and the gang at the Department of Revenue. Tax amnesty September 23rd, as in a week from today, through November 22nd. What will happen?
1 week from today, the website will formally open, and that will be a means whereby taxpayers that are in arrears at the Department of Revenue, either through not filing their returns, overstating, understating their returns, not paying what they owe, can go to that website and make it right with the state within 5 to 10 minutes time.
What kind of money do you think will be coming to the state as a result of this program?
Well, we've seen estimates, both from our own estimates, from our analysts there, where we're going to send out approximately 443,000 notices. They're already in the mail from the Secretary of Revenue. Tim will be sending letters to those who have...
Tim Barfield, right?
Tim Barfield, the Secretary, is going to send out letters to delinquent taxpayers whereby they are made aware of the fact that for certain tax periods they are behind. Out of those 443,000, we have estimated approximately $1.3 billion is available in delinquent taxes. There are some others that are in categories of audit assessment or in litigation proceedings that we're also looking at as well. We've seen estimates as low as $30 million from the Legislative Fiscal Office, and we have been given the goal by the state legislature to give us $200 million. So we're doing everything we can possibly do to execute their wish and to make sure the taxpayers know about this program.
That's $200 million out of $1.3
billion
that you say is available. So we're talking less than $1.06. What happens to the other $1.1 billion?
Well, due to the complexity of the tax code and the various spate of tax types that are available out there, not all of the issues that are surrounding this collection capacity are that cut and dried. It's not just merely a way that people can look at their tax returns and basically see where they're behind or they have not reported and just send that in. There are millions, even billions of dollars that are tied up in litigation and audit. I would remind you that if we look back to the history showing us of the last tax amnesty of 2009, we had six taxpayers that basically accounted for $140 million of the entire $480 million collected during that season. So there's going to be a lot of, it's a bit dicey here as we try to analyze this and move forward. We're just trying to raise the level of taxpayers to make sure that this is out there and the knowledge of this program is available to all taxpayers.
So in the previous one, six taxpayers accounted for how much?
$140 million of the $480 million that we collected in 2009.
$140 million. Were these individuals?
These were corporations.
Okay. That makes a bit more sense.
Yes.
So your amnesty program applies this time to both individuals and to corporations.
Yes. Any taxpayers there that I have an account that is delinquent with the Revenue Department can apply and make those restitutions available.
What about the penalties? How much penalties will
you're not going to pay any penalty this time. If you take advantage of it for this year, you're only going to pay half the interest. If that goes away in the preceding years, a three-year amnesty program has been launched. This is the first year of that three-year amnesty. So this time you're going to pay half the interest and none of the penalty and all of the tax. We've had a bit of misinformation out there that this was some method of tax avoidance. You're not going to get rid of not paying the tax. You're going to have to become compliant to pay the tax, but you're not going to have to pay the penalty, or you're only going to have to pay half the interest this time.
And the interest rate is what? Do you know?
I do not. Okay. I can find that out.
All right. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Doug Baker, Communications Director for the Department of Revenue. This is called the Louisiana Tax Amnesty 2013, A Fresh Start. Now, some people, like our friend C.B. Fergotston, believe a fresh start is a way for deadbeats to benefit. Does he have a point?
Well, I think he's not alone in his statements, although there's been more eloquent ways to attach adjectives to those who are behind their taxes. Deadbeat is certainly not one that we would use with the taxpayers of Louisiana. The treasurer himself has stated such. Of course, he knows this well when he was Secretary of Revenue, John Kennedy, and ran one of these programs and understand the pitfalls associated with running such a program as this. We've heard from many legislators themselves, even last week when we're around the state, of sharing with us that they are uneasy to make this a normative procedure of tax policy. And we understand that. That is a concern. It is something the Secretary has made aware of, and the Governor is certainly aware of that. And this was put together and during the last session as a way to balance the budget by members of the state legislature. So we hope to make a normative policy that people pay their taxes on time in a way that is compliant with the law.
Well, I'm reading those who are eligible, and they are taxpayers who filed a tax return or report, who failed to report all income or all tax, interest, and penalties that were due, taxpayers who claimed incorrect credits or deductions, taxpayers who misrepresented or omitted any tax due, and certain taxpayers under audit or in administrative or judicial litigation. Now, this is something that was last done when, Doug?
2009 was the last time that this was completed in the state of Louisiana.
That was the governor's first term. This is his second term, and generally, for these things to have impact, you have to space them out. My guess is that this would be the final tax amnesty program for the gentle two terms.
Well, we would hope so, but the tax amnesty, again, should never be seen as a normative pattern of tax policy, only to be used in critical areas or critical times whereby it's somewhat of cleaning out the system and making things anew, as it were.
And I see that you're making electronic payments possible through MasterCard, Discover, American Express, or Visa.
We will take your money, Jim. That's exactly right.
Well, this is something that will bring some money, and it's hard to gauge, but you're saying about $200 million is the goal. In a budget that's over $25 billion, how much does $200 million do as far as balancing the books?
Well, when the members of the Ledge were putting forth this plan and bringing forth an alternative budget that was passed out of the House in HB 1 last session, this was a critical part and a critical linchpin in their budgeting process and procedure. It is a line item, as it were, that enables the budget to be balanced. And so we're hopeful that we're going to be able to meet this goal, mm-hmm. and we're doing everything possible to do that through these means.
We're visiting with Douglas Baker. He is the communications director for the Department of Revenue, at least for a little while longer, has degrees from other places other than Louisiana State University. Went to Johns Hopkins University, right?
I did, yes.
I saw that was ranked, I think, one of the top 10 universities in America.
It is the number one university for which I studied there, political theory and government. So I was very privileged to study there with Dr. Ginsburg and Dr. Holston.
Did you like Baltimore?
I did. It was a lovely town, Bean Town. I became a Chris Davis fan and a fan of the Baltimore Orioles, second only to the Texas Rangers.
Yeah. How many home runs does Chris Davis have?
I don't know, but he went into the score of this. You're the sports king. You're trying to embarrass me here, Jim, yeah. But I'm going to go ahead. I do know that he went into Orioles playbooks there and made history there, so he's
yeah. Well,
the best.
He looks like he's going to deprive Cabrera of Detroit the Triple Crown this year. So
never get into a statistical argument with a sports writer.
Also a degree from the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. You have a diverse background.
I studied philosophy and ethics there, moral ethics there at seminary.
So, and you got into government? Some would
say into government. I mean, yeah. How could that work out? You know, I mean, ethics and government, do that go together? So, but I believe it does.
Well, the Department of Revenue is led by a guy who started his career at Tiger Egg, Tim Barfield, who went on to become president of the Shaw Group, which was Baton Rouge's only Fortune 500 company for a while. And he runs a tight ship over there. I understand he makes you wear a coat and tie every day.
Every day. Requires us to wear a coat and tie every day.
Absolutely. And you look the part.
Well, thank you, sir. That is the secretary's prerogative there, and he enforces it.
And I assume that he follows his own rules.
He does.
Well, that's a good thing, I think. So you're representing the state of Louisiana. You should look sharp, and Doug looks sharp. But tax business is not the sexiest area of state government. Do you like what you do?
Well, sure. It's a critical area of state government in that the fair collection of taxes is always of importance to me, because when the money which drives the programs, which involves all the infrastructure of state government, has certainly been a challenge to master when you're not an accountant or a lawyer. But as I tell my colleagues who are accountants and lawyers in the building, that you need a few normal folks in the building just to make sure you get it right. So it has been fun and enjoyable for me.
You've been there about a year, right?
I have, yes, sir.
Now, there are rumors that you're in line for other positions in state government.
Well, let me dispel the rumor, because the rumor is to be dispelled because it is done. I will be moving over to the commissioner's office next week.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you, sir.
That's commissioner of administration.
Yes, this is my new boss.
You'll be taking Michael DiResto's place.
I have big shoes to fill. Michael has done an excellent job.
Well, thank you for breaking the news right
here. Yes, right
here,
ladies and gentlemen.
So that's a big job.
That is.
I mentioned the $25 billion or so budget we have. You'll be counting every dollar now that you're at the Commissioner of Revenues, Commissioner of Administration.
Yes, well, the Commissioner has a tough job to be able to administer those funds fairly, equitably, and in a way that is in line with the Governor's understanding and his prerogatives. So it's a great honor and a great privilege and a great challenge all in one.
Well, and a great opportunity for you.
I'm very thankful.
And Doug Baker, as we've heard on this show before, worked very closely with a former governor, Mike Huckabee.
Yes.
How was that experience?
It was great. He was a great communicator. I learned so much from him as to how to communicate via media. He was kind of social media before social media was cool, in a way that he was able to somewhat distill complex issues of governmental policy down to where people could understand mm-hmm. them and at more the pedestrian level. So he was great at that. I enjoyed working for him, and it was an honor to serve him.
When did you get the call on this new job?
I guess it was about a couple of weeks ago.
You're good at keeping a secret.
Well,
all right. Did the call come from the governor?
It did not, but I'm sure he knows about it.
I would think so. I would imagine it was his decision to make the call and have Doug Baker as the new communications director at the Commissioner of Administration's office. And he is. When do you officially leave?
This is my last week at Revenue. I'll begin my duties next Monday.
So you're leaving right before tax amnesty.
And we've got it started, and we're going to leave it in good hands.
Which starts 1 week from today.
1 week from today.
Yeah, applications for tax amnesty begin at 12 a.m. That's midnight, Monday, September 23rd. We'll talk a bit more with Doug Baker when we return after this quick timeout on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A bit more time with Douglas Baker, Communications Director for the Department of Revenue, and as of next week, the Communications Director for the Commissioner of Administration. Miss Nelson in Scotlandville, good morning. You're on the air with Doug Baker.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so glad to be a part of you guys' show this morning. I have a question. Basically with me is that I was out of Louisiana for several years, partly because of Katrina. And before I left, I filed some taxes through the online process. And through the online process, you're able to do it, everything electronically, and then you have to turn around and send your paperwork later. Well, I never did the paperwork. And because of that, I started getting letters about, that I was delinquent. In other words, I got a refund and everything, but because I didn't send the paperwork in, I became a delinquent person. And I'm trying to figure out, am I eligible for the amnesty program?
Three things, ma'am. Thank you for your call. First of all, you're correct. If you're a partial year resident of the state of Louisiana, you still must file with the Department of Revenue certifying that fact and pay any taxes due to your time of residency here, even if you have to move away due to the unfortunate circumstance. And I'm sorry about that for you with Hurricane Katrina. Number two, let me give you a phone number. It will be on the website, www.ldrtaxamnesty.com. That will help you. It's 866-782-9241, and you can look on the website and find that more carefully there, more cogently. But third is look in the mail and see if you get a letter from the Secretary of Revenue, and that should be coming to you with at least this week or next week. See if you're eligible for amnesty, and that should help you out.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson.
Okay.
And Dan downtown. Hello, Dan. You're on the air with Doug Baker.
Yes, Mr. Baker. You mentioned the state's budget problems. Have you and your boss, Secretary Barfield, considered cutting your own six-figure salaries rather than cutting back on services for the poor middle class?
Thank you for your call, sir. Our salaries are set under authorization from the Civil Service Code and authorized by the legislature, so we'll let them decide on how much we're worth to be paid.
And I would imagine this is competitive with other states, the positions you hold.
Sure.
Okay. Here's a question from Colonel Henry Johnson saying, Mr. Jim, in the spirit of the new law on the matter, could you ask and or verify which state issued Mr. Douglas's driver's license and vehicle registration?
Yes, thank you. I'll happily comply to that and reply to that. I have a state of Louisiana driver's license and a proud LSU license plate on my 2007 GMC Yukon parked right outside Jim's studio for any wanderers by that would like to photograph that and perhaps put it on their blog. So,
okay. And for those who are unaware, you are a native of Louisiana.
I am from Monroe, Louisiana, northeast
Louisiana. Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Ouachita High School in Monroe.
Ouachita High.
I did. Once a powerhouse, no longer.
I think that's where Don Redden went.
My very good friend, and his mother was one of my teachers, and sister is still a friend.
And he left us much too soon, 25 years ago. Well, you knew this was going to come up, and I've had a few emails on the matter, so I'll go ahead and talk about it with you. Because Louisiana bans same-sex marriage, gay married couples who file jointly on their federal tax returns will have to file as single on their state returns, despite state law forbidding them to do so. How can this be?
Well, Friday, the Secretary issued a ruling that basically is in line with the Constitution of the state of Louisiana that states that marriage in Louisiana is to be with one woman and one man. That's Article 12, Section 15. It was stated forth clearly. We must follow the law, and the Secretary did not change anyone's status here in the state of Louisiana as they filed their tax returns. It is in line with the Constitution, and the broad categories remain for single and for married.
And on the tax amnesty program, once again, that number you gave, you might want to repeat it.
Sure. It's 866-782-9241. The best way to go is to www.ldrtaxamnesty.com, and you'll be able to find all the information you need on that website.
Now, there are some exemptions.
There are.
Starting with motor fuel taxes.
Yes.
You want to go through some of those?
Well, sure. Usually these are taxes that are paid via other means that are not exempt or privy to amnesty provisions. These types of things for oil and gas tax like that, inspection or supervision fees are not eligible. And penalties that are directly attributable to the failure to submit information or reports based on underpayment of tax is not there. Of course, if you're a criminal and under indictment or in litigation under criminal proceedings, you're also not eligible for tax amnesty. The broad base and the broad swath of taxpayers, however, in Louisiana are certainly available to this program should they be behind on their taxes.
I was surprised that you mentioned 443,000 people are behind. That's about 1 out of 10 people in the state.
It is. It is. And we've tried to do some analysis as much as we can. By federal law, we cannot go into state tax returns in a way that seeks to find personal information and disperse that information demographically. But we've been able to understand and to see what I think we've seen coming out of the recession is that people are behind on their taxes. And once they get behind, it's very difficult to right the ship. This is a way that we hope that will help them do that and get back on track.
Well, we thank you, Doug. Any parting thoughts?
Oh, no. Thank you, Jim.
Well, good luck to you. And we
thank you, sir.
We'll keep up with you in your new
endeavor. I'm sure we'll be back in the budget debacles that may approach this session, correct? No. Thank you, Jim.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Doug Baker. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. And we're joined now by Judge Jeanine Pirro, former prosecutor, judge, and elected official from the great state of New York, currently a legal analyst and television personality, the host of Fox News's reality legal show Justice with Judge Jeanine, which premiered in January of 2011. She's a Republican from Westchester County and served as a county judge before serving as an electric district attorney for Westchester County for a dozen years. Good morning, Judge Pirro.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's an interesting world in which we live.
Yes, it is. You know what I think is most interesting? When you introduce me as being from the great state of New York, I have a little more spring in my step given the fact that New York City rejected both Spitzer and Wiener, which indicates how smart New Yorkers really are. But I'm delighted to be with you, Jim, and I'm delighted to be able to talk about Clever Fox and all the other issues of the day.
All right. Well, you started with the New York election. Was there any surprise that Anthony Weiner went down in flames? I think he got 5% of the votes.
Right. You know, it was an incredibly low number, and I think that it was a clear rejection of his lunacy, his delusionalism, and whatever other psychosis he may have. And I think that, look, New Yorkers are, you know, taxed at a very, very high level. I think that they are cognizant of all of the dangers of being in a target zone of terrorists. And, you know, they want responsible elected officials, people who can recognize the seriousness as well as the greatness that New York is. And, you know, I grew up in upstate New York, which is really a contradiction to New York City where I work now. You know, it's farm country. I worked in a dairy and, you know, I was a small town America. And now, you know, the issues are bigger and the stakes are higher given what's going on in the world, the craziness with Syria, the talk of military strikes, you know, in a country that's in the midst of a civil war, possibly aiding al-Qaeda. And I talk about this on Justice with Judge Jeanine. And I'm at Twitter and at Facebook at Judge Jeanine. It's a dangerous world now, and we need responsible elected officials.
We're visiting with Judge Jeanine Pirro. 297-5633 is your number. Now, Weiner, when he lost last week, he flashed the proverbial middle finger to the media. That's a classy way to go out, isn't it?
Yeah, flipping the bird to the public and the media and letting a photographer take that picture is indicative of his psychosis and the fact that the man is in need of therapy. And I don't know what the deal is with the wife, Uma. The truth is that she sat there with the interview, I think it was People Magazine, when she knew full well that he had continued with his sexting and said that he was healed and better. And, you know, I get the stand by your man thing. I truly do get it. But I don't get when you're involved in a lie, making like your husband's fine enough to run New York City, when the truth is the guy's going to be spending more time sexting than he is running the city. I mean, they'd have to have an on-site therapist for this guy. But enough with Weiner, and
New York
is done with him.
But his wife, a beautiful, intelligent woman, she says she loves him.
You know, I get you love him, but don't sit there and say he's healed when you know he's not. And you know, the truth is, what I talk about in my book, Danny Fox, the Danny Fox novels, are it's about truth and justice. It's about honesty, and it's about consequences and being responsible. And whether you're in politics or whether you're a prosecutor, that's our mantra. You do something, you're accountable. You're responsible. There are consequences. And I think that whether it's in, you know, the Danny Fox novels, and we just finished Clever Fox that's out now, and Sly Fox, it's about a young woman who understands and starts to recognize the issues in the world. And you've got to be true to your moral core. People recognize genuineness. I mean, they recognize honesty and integrity. And just as New Yorkers rejected the dishonesty of Anthony Weiner, and the, you know, Spitzer and his, I'm going to prosecute every prostitute out there, but I'll hire them on my spare time. You know, people reject that. They want honesty, and that's what Clever Fox is about. It's about honesty, and it's about making sure that people are accountable.
Now, you have had a long career, not only in, as a writer, which you have mentioned a few times in the last few moments, and as a television personality, but as a legal person and an elected official, and you were the Republican nominee for Attorney General in New York in 2006. You lost the race to a guy named Andrew Cuomo. How was that?
You know, I'll tell you, I lost to Andrew Cuomo, and I respect the man. And you look, I've ran for office 5 times in New York. Politics is a blood sport in this state, in case you haven't noticed. And, you know, I was lucky to be in politics and doing what I loved, and that was prosecuting for 30 years. For me, it wasn't about getting to the next level. It was about a mission that I had. I started the first domestic violence unit in the nation when people thought that battered women were inconsequential. I fought for abused children and prosecuted those cases when people said the kids were better off even with an abusive mother or father. You know, I did one of the first internet pedophile sting operations in the nation with a 100% conviction rate. To me, it was about a crusade for the underdog, for the person who never asked to be a victim in the first place. And so politics, and you know, I'm happy for Andrew Cuomo, but politics wasn't about the next level. It was continuing, for me, the fight to level the playing field for, you know, the silent victim of crime. You know, the person who just kind of fades away after that initial hit in the press. It's about making people accountable. It's about bringing the new issues, you know, that are on the horizon to the front lines. And that's what I did for 30 years. It was the best job in the world, being DA. But now I'm in television. I, you know, I had a court show for 3 years for which I won an Emmy. And then now I'm on Justice with Judge Jeanine on Fox. 9 o'clock Saturdays Eastern Time, and then it repeats at midnight. And I talk about whatever issues move me, whether it's, you know, things like Benghazi or, you know, Syria or, you know, the death of Whitney Houston. Whatever the breaking news is, that's what I do.
Well, we'll get to Syria. We might even get to Whitney Houston, but I've had a few inquiries in the last few moments about your campaign for Attorney General. You were hit hard with some allegations regarding your marriage in that campaign. That must have been a tough experience.
You know, I think that you recognize that when you're in the public eye that there will be skepticism, and if you are a woman, there is tremendous skepticism. I ran on my record, a record that I was proud of, and a record that I thought and that the voters for 4 elections, you know, 4 times over, thought that, you know, it was worth putting me in positions of strength and positions where I could make a difference. All of the other stuff is always hard on the family, but, you know, right now I have 2 kids. My son's in finance. My daughter is a lawyer. And, you know, it is a price that you pay to be in the public eye, and I wouldn't change a minute of it. I think that anyone who gets involved in politics, and even if you don't, I think people realize the mud that's thrown. And if you could withstand it and talk about your record and the fact that you are capable of going and making a difference, then people will listen. People recognize the truth. They know what bull is.
All right. You're a Catholic of Lebanese descent.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Syria?
I don't think that we should be involved in Syria, and irrespective of whether, you know, I'm a Catholic of Lebanese descent, you know, my dad fought in World War II, my grandfather fought in World War II. You know, the truth is that it is a part of the world that has been at war with each other for 1,300 years. And I don't think we should be spilling any American blood in a part of the world that despises us. And certainly, and this is where I disagree with the president, arming the rebels is arming al-Qaeda, Ansar al-Sharia, who took us down in Benghazi. It is lunacy. Al-Qaeda took down the World Trade Center. And, you know, for the longest time, the president tried to convince us that they were on the run. Hogwash. They're not on the run. They're building up in the in Mali and North Africa. And the last thing we need to do is move the arms from Libya that we left there when Gaddafi was deposed, and send them to Syria to our enemies.
Ty on 3rd Street asked Judge Jeanine Pirro, what do you think of Hillary Clinton's presidential ambitions?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that Hillary Clinton should do whatever it is she thinks she needs to do. I mean, you know, she is certainly a smart, accomplished woman. No doubt about it.
Do you think she can win?
You know, I haven't run a polling office in my many faceted career, but who knows, you know. The winds change on a regular basis, but we'll see.
What about your neighbor, Chris Christie? Is he a formidable candidate?
I think Chris Christie is an extremely formidable candidate, and I think he proved it when he, you know, with the hurricane and bringing in Obama. I mean, New Jersey, you know, as much as that tweaked Republicans, New Jersey, I loved him for it. It wasn't a time to play politics, although many thought he was playing politics. I happen to think that Chris Christie is a phenomenal individual. I think he is a straight-talking, no-nonsense, straight shooter. And I think with him, what you see is what you get. I don't see any of the nuances that a lot of the other potential candidates, you know, will try to play with language and games and all that. I happen to like Chris Christie a lot.
I mentioned you're a lawyer, a judge, a writer, a broadcaster. Which do you like most?
The DA.
You like being the DA?
Yeah, without a doubt. It's the best job in the world. It's you can prioritize the crime that you think needs to be prosecuted. You can put resources. And that's what Clever Fox, my book, is about. It, you know, when we come off the Zimmerman case, we realize that, you know, a lot of prosecution is more than just who done it. And the public is fascinated with criminal justice. The public absolutely is, you know, you watch the television shows and the books that are selling. Everybody wants to be a part of it, to understand it, but what they don't understand is what I describe in my book, and that is that, you know, there's a lot of politics that goes into the decision to prosecute crime. And Danny Fox, who's my alter ego in the book Clever Fox, sees that, you know, in an election year, her boss more than anything wants a murder case, a horrific murder case solved.
We'll be back with Judge Jeanine in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Judge Jeanine Pirro is with us for a few more moments. Former prosecutor, judge, and elected official, and the host of Fox News Channel's Justice with Judge Jeanine, and also the author of the Danny Fox novels, the latest Clever Fox. Here's a question that I think is good. You live in New York, a state that once veered Republican is now solidly Democrat. Here we are in Louisiana with a state that was once overwhelmingly Democratic that now most of the elected officials are Republicans. How do you explain what's happened in America with the blue states and the red states?
You know, I'll tell you, I wish I could explain it. I mean, you're right. New York at one time was the bastion of Republicanism, and the truth is I ran as a Republican in a Democratic state and won 4 out of 5 times. But I think that what we're seeing in this country is a tremendous change in the electorate and in the, you know, the people who are being or who are voting and find it in their own self-interest to be a part of one party or the other. I honestly, you know, am somewhat shocked. It's almost as though there's a scenario being set up where there's only one party. And I think it's up to the Republican Party now to start coming up with some solutions, some answers, and some real candidates who reflect not necessarily an extreme wing, but something a little more center so that we can get elected again.
Well, Judge Janine, we thank you for joining us. Congrats on your success, and hope we talk soon.
Thank you so much, Jim. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. And now we are joined by a voice that is heard here frequently. Frank Tavares, the voice of NPR's News Underwriters. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. And I just want you to know it's been an honor to be a part of your show, even peripherally over the years.
Well, thank you. I hear your voice frequently, dozens of times a day. Frank is heard reading the names of the organizations, the corporations, and the individuals who contribute to the funding of NPR's news programs. So you hear him on Morning Edition, Weekend Edition, All Things Considered, Fresh Air, The Diane Rehm Show, and previously Talk of the Nation. How did you get this gig?
Well, it's one of those stories where sometimes you're in the right place at the right time, walking down the right corridor outside of a radio studio. And way back when NPR decided to come up with this concept of doing the funding credits. And it was a firewall concept, basically to make sure that the information about funders that are supporting the different programs cannot be confused with the content of the program. And one of the things that we were very concerned about is we did not want to have, for the news programs, any of the hosts of the news programs doing the funding credits. So at the time, I was head of one of the programming departments down there that was not a news department, and I hosted a couple of NPR documentary-type shows, but they were not considered news. So my voice was a safe voice. And when we started it, the producer, Wendy Blair, who's been producing them all these years, asked me if I would lend my voice to this. And in between racing from one studio to another, I said, sure, why not? And had no idea it would last as long as it did.
Now, there's some who believe you have an easy job, but you're a busy man, aren't you?
It's like so many things, if you make it look easy, people think it's easy, and the reality of it is it's not. Last year we recorded somewhere, well, you've got the little 10-second credits that you hear after the newscast, but then most often you hear them in little combinations, about three, sometimes four of them at the breaks of the news programs. And of the individual ones, last year we recorded somewhere around 15,000 of them. And we'll do them mostly in major recording sessions every other Saturday, and we'll knock off maybe 500 or 600 of them at a shot. In the little pods of three, that might be 200, 220 or whatnot. Then in between there, now here's a concept that always makes me smile. There'll be funding credit emergency. So, can you imagine such a thing? And we'll have, there may be a phone number that's changed. There may be a line of copy that an underwriter wants to change, and we'll go back into the studio and we'll update those things. But, yeah, sometimes it can be really challenging, especially during allergy season.
Yeah, what happens when you lose your voice?
It's only happened, I'm touching wood here, it's only happened one time in all these years. It was about 2 years ago, and I got laryngitis. And for 2 days, I had no voice. And I have to admit, it really shook me. So we delayed one session, and when the voice started coming back, we couldn't delay it any longer. And so for about a week, a number of the credits that were on the air started to sound like my grandfather, actually. But that's something that, well, you're a voice guy also, so you know that this is something that we always worry about. And before one of the major sessions, I'll start to obsess about whether or not I'm overusing my voice and what I'm eating and what I'm drinking. Lots of water, that's one of the keys. So, but that just comes along with the territory.
Well, is there anything you don't drink or eat to avoid losing your voice?
Dairy. On days that I'm recording, I'm very careful about that, and anything that has that might stick in the throat. So no ice cream, a lot of desserts. I'll stay away from those things. And of course, it's been years and years and years since I've even ever thought about smoking. That's just that would be a real problem, I think.
Well, as you know, in years past, some great voices of the past were synonymous with smoking.
Yes. And it gave some of those voices a type of an edge that you could hear. And one of the problems with that is the voices would change as the people got older. And so by the time they'd been doing it for a number of decades, you could really hear the difference between the younger version and the middle-aged version of those voices.
Mm-hmm. Did I hear you right? You said you do 15,000 announcements?
Last year it was somewhere, give or take, a couple of hundred, 15,000. This year I think we're on pace to do about the same amount. I don't keep a running count, but everyone, because it scares me.
And these
so,
are...
But, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, they're like 3 to 4 hour sessions that you're involved with.
Yes, yeah. And those can be grueling. The biggest challenge for those sessions is to make sure that at the end of the 3 hours, the thing that you're recording sounds as fresh and energetic as the one that you did in the first 20 minutes. And sometimes I have to admit that really is a challenge. And then the other thing is, of course, the timing on all of these. The newscast credits are actually 10 and a half seconds with the support for NPR at the beginning, and the longer ones are 37 and a half seconds, except the ones for Diane Rehm and Terry Gross are a second shorter. Unless they have a special open, then they are longer. And there's all these little time posts, Jim, that you keep in your head and you watch the clock as you're doing it, and that can make it, you know, pretty exciting.
We're visiting with Frank Tavares, the voice of NPR's news underwriters. Now, do you develop a particular rhythm, a type of cadence that gives each individual underwriter perhaps a different sound than the previous one or the next one?
There are a few ways that we can differentiate one from another, because part of what we're trying to do is not make these sound too commercial. Now, having said that, the answer to your question is yes, and sometimes there will be a different cadence for one or a rhythm to another. I want them to sound as if you could pull one out of one of the funding credit groups that you've heard on a Monday afternoon and substitute it in on Thursday, and it'll still fit. But yet there is a certain kind of musicality to some of the phrases that people use and so forth. And I try to pay attention to that. And again, it's one of the challenges.
Frank Tavares is a voice we've heard. Now we know the name. You are also a professor, I understand.
I teach communication, business communication, organizational communication at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. From where I'm speaking to you now. And that's been my day job for a number of years since I left my full-time gig at NPR. And it's something I enjoy very much.
Lauren asked, how do you develop a voice like yours? We had Larry King on a few weeks ago, and he said he was born with his voice.
Well, that's part of it. You know, genetics, I think, is a big part of it. And I think another part of it, as we were talking earlier, Jim, I think is taking care of the voice. But you know something? You and I and your listeners have heard people with all different kinds of voices that we enjoy listening to. And I think part of that is how relaxed they are in talking and sharing information and reading. And that's something that you can, up to a point, learn how to do. But in terms of the register of the voice, yeah, I think I have my dad to thank for that.
Maybe your mom, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a busy day. I suppose you get the weekends off.
Well, that's actually when we do most of our reporting.
Really? Yeah. So you may that may be why you're talking to me today. Maybe this is a lighter day than the past few.
Well, with a day job, there are no light days. But some of the weekends are pretty intense, and we're talking because I'm between classes. So,
well, you give that voice of yours a workout. It's something that some folks say, you know, when you're in the line of work that you're in, that you ought to give it a rest every now and then.
And the day before we record is a day that I normally don't have classes, and I try not to schedule meetings on those days, so I can let the voice rest. The biggest challenge is the length of time of those sessions. Anybody can do it, I say, even me. It's easy, even if the voice isn't in the best shape. If I've got a 15-minute recording session, that's not a problem. But when I think about these 3.5, 4-hour-long sessions, I tell you, Jim, I try not to think about them because it psychs me.
Well, have you seen In a World?
Not yet, but I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, your voice is so synonymous with NPR that I would imagine they don't want you venturing out in other places.
Well, it's interesting. That's never been a restriction in my contract, but that's something that I've been very, very careful about. And listeners actually will start to hear a change. Sometime over the next month or so, as they're bringing my job in-house. One of the things we didn't mention is that I live in Connecticut, and I record from Connecticut, or voice everything from Connecticut, and it's recorded in D.C. at NPR. And NPR made the decision late in the spring that they wanted to combine not just my position, but that of the producer, Wendy Blair, and do everything in-house, the idea being that perhaps it might be a little more efficient and effective. So sometime over the next, it'll probably start to happen, I would imagine, the beginning of October, middle of October. You may be hearing a different voice reading some of the funding credits, which means that for the first time in decades, really, I'll be able to travel out of town without taking an emergency list of phone numbers of NPR radio stations with me.
And you always have to hit the time to within half a second.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the crucial thing. And make it sound, when you're in that last credit, that you're not racing to finish to the end or dragging it out. So you've got to keep that that pace all the way through.
You know, there's a blooper reel of Casey Kasem on YouTube. You've probably
yeah.
heard it. And the poor guy, as you know, you get frustrated. Sometimes you say things that you wouldn't say for the public at large. I would imagine at times you've had some frustrating moments. There are days when it's
easier. Absolutely never. There's no tape. Yes, I have. And some of those moments have shown up on NPR holiday tapes that the engineers put together. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you sound strong. You could keep doing this for a while.
The voice is still doing well, and I use it in other things, not just in my radio work, but also in my fiction writing work. One of the things that I enjoy doing is readings of my fiction, and I find that's nice because for one time I'm in front of an audience and I can see how people react to things.
Well, how is the writing going?
Actually, very well. Of short stories that came out just this earlier this month, just this past week, The Man Who Built Boxes and Other Stories by Frank Tavares. I just love that. It's just such a hoot. Available on Amazon. It's by Bacon Press Books. And this is one of the things, Jim, where most of these stories had been previously published, and all of them had been written. And I went into this project in the spring with a publisher, thinking, well, how hard could this be? You know, they're all done. I had no idea.
Well,
it was a real learning experience for me this summer.
Jordan asked Frank if you're the same Frank Tavares who was an infielder with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
No, but I've been asked that before, and it made me start watching some of the old Pittsburgh games that I might not have otherwise.
Yeah.
He may spell his name. Well, I've seen both of our names spelled a variety of different ways, but no, that's not me. I think he gets paid a little bit more than I
well,
do.
He used to, maybe.
Well, good point.
What was your first job in this business?
My first job in this business was, like many of us who have worked in public radio, was at a college radio station outside of Chicago, Illinois, WETN FM 88.1. And the reason why I started that, talk about how things can be so much of a fluke sometimes. Somebody wrote in my high school yearbook, Pauline is her first name, and I'm blanking on her last name, something along the lines of, with a voice like yours, you should be in radio. I'd never thought of it before. It had never crossed my mind. So my first year as a freshman, I'm going through the club fairs and the campus organizations, and here's a table for the student radio station. And
well, I'm sorry, Frank, we got to roll, but thank you so much. The voice of NPR's News Underwriters. Thank you, Frank.
Pleasure being with you.
My pleasure. And we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.